The sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at the role of U.S. historical black colleges and universities in Africa. What impact do they have on the continent? That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Salih. And today we are discussing the role that historically black colleges in the United States have played or play for Africans. Historically black U.S. colleges and universities like Morehouse College and Howard University are a familiar presence at the independence celebrations of several African countries. HBCUs play a critical role in ensuring that African Americans, Africans and students of all races receive a quality education. My colleague Paul Ndiho has more on the story.
Historically, black U.S. colleges and universities produced many of the leaders from the civil rights era. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. graduated from Morehouse College, Dr. W. E. B. Du Bois at Fisk University, Reverend Jesse Jackson, North Carolina A&T, and Congressman John Lewis also graduated from Fisk University. But less is known about the immense contributions HBCUs had in modeling and developing leaders in the struggle for the independence of countries in Africa. This generation of leaders was very outspoken in advocating for the rights of Africans and in fighting for the independence of many new nations. Dr. Nnamdi Azikiwe, who became Nigeria's first president in 1963, was a classmate of famed American poet Langston Hughes and former U.S. Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall at Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, Prime Minister of Ghana, the first black African nation to gain independence, graduated from Lincoln University in Pennsylvania. Dr. Hastings Kamuzubanda, Malawi's first president, graduated from Mahari Medical College in Nashville, Tennessee. Today, there are over 100 historically black colleges and universities across America, granting over 50,000 degrees to students of all racial and ethnic backgrounds, according to a Pew Research study. VOA's Ndimiyake Mwakarere is a graduate of Howard University.
Howard University gave me the foundation. I mean, for sure, I got my first degree there. So it was really a question of understanding what does it mean to study and what does it mean to be informed about the discipline and the area of choice that you've identified as your career path. It really opened my eyes as well to the experience of the black American culture, the history of slavery, and how these historically black colleges really help to keep that memory fresh.
Many historically black institutions of higher learning, like Lincoln University in Pennsylvania, Pellman College and Morehouse College in Atlanta, Howard University in Washington, D.C., are continuing to play a significant role in educating students and empowering the African-American community. Attending any university is now a very expensive proposition. Terry Hato of the American Council on Education represents thousands of colleges and universities across the United States.
A terrible conundrum that we face as a country. We want more and more post-secondary education. We want more focus on academic quality and graduation. At the same point, the funding sources for higher education have been diminishing.
For the past 30 years, the college tuition in the U.S. has been rising at twice the rate of inflation, and private schools now charge an average of more than $30,000 a year. Earlier this year, billionaire American philanthropist Robert F. Smith pledged to pay off the student loan debt of the 2019 Morehouse graduate.
And my family is making a grant to eliminate their student loans.
Yeah. U.S. President Donald Trump is also supporting HBCUs.
Historically, black colleges and universities are incredibly important institutions woven into the fabric of our history.
Historically, black colleges and universities continue to be a major educational pipeline in preparing young people to serve in their chosen endeavors. Paul Liho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us today are three distinguished guests. Leslie Baskerville, President and CEO of the National Association for Equal Opportunity in Higher Education. Kwabena Boateng, Founder and Co-President of the African Diaspora Nation. And Yaakob Estatic, Vice President of International Affairs of Morgan State University. I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I'm profoundly honored and humbled to be a guest on your program. And I congratulate you on the breadth and depth of the information that you provide to those of us around the globe who are interested in African affairs.
Profoundly honored for both your compliments and support.
Thank you.
And let me come to you immediately. Not that you bribed me to do that. You just happened to be next to me. First of all, where exactly did you go for your undergraduate?
So for my undergraduate, I went to Douglas College at Rutgers University. Douglas College was at the time the women's college, and Rutgers University had Rutgers College as an all-male college. Mm-hmm. I went to Douglas College at Rutgers University because I'm a New Jersey resident, and the cost of college was prohibitive. I have an identical twin sister who was going to college at the same time as was I, and she was going to Oberlin College, a private institution that was very expensive. I discovered that if I worked three jobs, I could cover my tuition and fees and make it through undergraduate college, and that's what I did. The special thing that I did beyond that was to go to the Howard University School of Law, which is the leading institution for producing justice janissaries, those who are leading in tearing down barriers, not only in America, but across the globe, using the Constitution as a transformational device to build wealth and create opportunities for all, but especially those who've traditionally been locked out.
Very interesting. Rutgers, of course, is not exactly one of your HBCU, but I'm reminded of a great civil rights activist.
Paul Robeson.
Actor Paul Robeson. Mm.
And I was privileged. One of my three jobs was to run the Paul Robeson Cultural Center and to engage students from the community of New Brunswick in learning about his legacy and the principles upon which he stood, and also creating a pathway for them to get into and out of college.
Very interesting. Paul Robeson, of course, was not only what we just talked about, but he actually also mentored while living in London some of the pioneer independence leaders of Africa. We're talking about the Kenyan founding president Jomo Kenyatta.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Nigerian founding president Nnamdi Azikiwe. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about others, of course, the Osagyefo. Mm-hmm. Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, the kid from Crawford.
Yes.
Very interesting. Now, talking about Crawford, Kwabena, you happen to come from Ghana.
Yes, I do.
Very interesting. So where did you go to your undergraduate?
I came from Akosombo International School in Ghana, then through Achimota School, which happens to have been where Dr. Kwame Nkrumah went, and Agri was also there as vice principal. Then I showed up at Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida.
Now, when you talk about Akosombo, did you come with some kind of or aspects of hydroelectric energy?
So that hydroelectric plant, the world-famous hydroelectric plant in Ghana, in Akosombo, was one of the singular initiatives of Dr. Kwame Nkrumah and HBCU. graduate. So I'm a beneficiary of that vision. My dad worked for the World Heritage Authority. He was a director of engineering and also director of engineering systems in the World Heritage Authority. So I have seen the enormous linkages between VCUs, those founding leaders, some of the legacy projects that they implemented, and the connection of being a beneficiary. So this is really interesting.
Interesting. I was telling you, of course, before we came here, that I had the opportunity to visit Florida A&M in Tallahassee back in the late 70s when I was an undergraduate at the State University of New York over in Tallahassee. You talked about, of course, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, who happens to be an alumni of HBCU. It wasn't actually for A&M, it was Lincoln.
That's right.
Yes.
I'm also a proud alumni of and grad of an HBCU. I came to undergraduate degree at Oregon State University. So I did my bachelor's degree there, and then I left for 2 years to get my bachelor's at Johns Hopkins University. So I was staying in Baltimore. Then I returned to Morgan State to become an instructor and lecturer. And I also did my doctorate. So I have 2 degrees from Morgan State University. Degree in electrical engineering and also a doctorate in engineering degree. And I've been teaching there for the past 25 years.
Very interesting.
Producing more African American engineers who are helping currently in the pipeline of the country.
Very interesting. You talk, of course, about the Morgan State University, and I said how I used to know. I used to know it as one of those great colleges and universities that produced world-class printers.
Mm-hmm.
You come from Ethiopia.
Yes.
And Ethiopia, of course, is known not for producing world-class printers, but world-class middle-distance and marathon runners.
Yes.
So we're talking about Abdul Kira here. So were you on a scholarship because you could probably contribute athletically also to Morgan State University for some reason?
I did some running growing up in Ethiopia. The most I've done was half a marathon. But when I came to Morgan, I was more focused on education. And after I finished my first semester, I had to go to the School of Engineering, the dean, and talk to him about giving me a scholarship, but not on athletics, based on merit. And I had a very good GPA, and I convinced him that if he gave me a scholarship, I will return the favor by tutoring my classmates and other students. So I became a tutor for the School of Engineering. And actually, I started a program called Operation No Fail, which at that time, any student who came to that program to get tutored will not fail any class. And most of my students never failed. And that's really where I got my passion for teaching. And after graduation, I said, now that Morgan invested in me in getting me an education, I'm going to return to Morgan State and teach. And I've been teaching for more than 25 years, and I'm proud to say that I have touched at least 1,000 electrical and computer engineers in the last 25 years.
Wow.
And they are all around the world, in the U.S. Working and in different areas.
Are there some in Africa?
A lot in Africa.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Lizzie, let me come to you again. So what are you doing as we talk? What are you doing right now? Have you remained faithful and loyal to HBCU?
I've remained faithful and loyal. I consider my service for HBCUs and the students and the community that is represented by HBCUs as my ministry, my calling. There's nothing that I would rather do, and I'm privileged and humbled that I've been able to meld my passion with my profession. So right now, I'm serving as president and CEO of the National Association for Equal Opportunity in Higher Education, NAFEO, which is the nation's only membership and advocacy association for the entire community of 106 historically black colleges and universities, and roughly 50 predominantly black institutions. And our association represents them in before judicial judicial bodies, administrative bodies, legislative bodies, with corporations and foundations, telling the remarkable story about HBCUs and their transformative power. But for HBCUs that are graduating disproportionate percentages of African ancestry persons in the growth and high needs areas of the nation and of the world, we could not have an excellent and diverse workforce as we are aspiring to have. But for HBCUs, we would not have an African-American middle class. The African-American community has a $1.3 trillion after-tax income. So HBCUs are punching above their weight in creating leaders, followers, people who are well prepared for corporations, public service, and the entire gamut. And I love to tell the story and provide the data. People think about HBCUs and they often think about the rich history of HBCUs, and that's important to know. But the contemporary story of their excellence and how 3% of American colleges and universities are graduating 42% of African Americans who get graduate degrees in the sciences, technology, engineering, and mathematics. 3% of American colleges and universities are graduating 50% of African ancestry persons who go on to be education professionals, 80% of African ancestry judges, 40% of African ancestry persons in the 116th Congress, 40% of the blacks in the United States Congress this year are alumni of HBCUs. And so they're graduating people who are serving quietly and making tremendous impacts, and those who are leading corporations, foundations, and America.
I guess you might also add that when the report talks about punching above its weight, it probably talks about how that type of quality education is really reflected in the manner that graduates of those colleges and universities are world class.
Absolutely. They are world class, and that's evidenced wherever they go. The important thing is about their service is that while they may choose to serve in any manner of places, the data suggests that HBCUs are graduating disproportionate percentages that also go into service, that also are giving forward. And so in your intro, when you showed Brother Smith, who went to Morehouse and relieved the students of their debt this year, and appealed to the graduating class to follow his example and to give forward, within an hour, graduates were already telling the stories about how they're giving forward. One of the students was President George French. He's been the president of Miles College in Birmingham for years and done an outstanding job. He also represents the HBCU community on the national accrediting body. But his son was one of them who told the story. He said he was blessed, and he didn't personally have debt, but he had a plan to give forward, and others did that. And so what we like to talk about is their excellence in their academics, but also the underpinnings of the things that we taught them. HBCUs were founded as HBCU education and liberation institutions, HBCU theology institutions. And so as they have grown to become world-class institutions and to prepare students for today's workforce, they have hung on to and they are instilling in our students those principles that really make them world-class.
And what about the man who is, among other things, known for having said that I have a dream that one day my children will be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin.
Absolutely. Dr. Martin Luther King. And then we've talked about several of the gentlemen, but we have attorney Dr. Marion Wright Edelman, who is the world's foremost champion of our children, who has given voice to children, has made sure that at every step along the process of not only budgeting and prioritizing in America, but in world forums, she has been the most potent voice for our children, and she too is an HBCU alumna.
And what about someone from New York, known as Spike Lee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the list goes on, and we get pride and we stand a little taller and we can market those whose names are really well known. But I think also about some of those who have gone to HBCUs and they're now working in senior executive positions in the government, but they're working in their faith institutions to establish HBCU councils. I think, for example, of Alfred Street Baptist Church, not far from where we are, which is has the largest and most impactful HBCU forum and fair around once a year, where about 80 of HBCUs come. They're admissions counselors, student financial aid counselors, and students from all around the country come. Mm-hmm. They have an opportunity to get interviewed, to get student financial aid, and in some instances, to get selected on the spot. Alfred Street Baptist Church is an exemplar in the types of individuals who are passionate about HBCUs, some of whom did go and some didn't go to HBCUs, but in their church, they are the most generous and supportive givers of and supportive of HBCUs, their students, and the entire community.
Very interesting. What about you, Kwabena?
Well, right now, my main focus, you know, she has enumerated the numerous benefits of historically black colleges and universities. And one thing I'd like to emphasize that they are citadels of educational leadership for decolonization and empowerment education.
Yeah.
The history bears that out. Nkrumah, Azikiwe, Hastings Banda, and on and on.
And for some reason, all of those somehow tell you, or you read somewhere, that in some way, shape, or form, they may in fact have been inspired by, among other people, Marcus Garvey.
That's right.
Yes.
But Marcus Garvey was not an alumni of that club.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the HBCUs became kind of centers of excellence, right? Mm-hmm. Atlanta, probably in the early 1900s, had, we could easily say, the most intellectual black population in the world. And
the intellectual epicenter.
Yes, epicenter. Mm-hmm.
Just like the Cape Coast to Ghana.
That's right.
The way the Cape Coast was before the Achimotas, you know, came up in Accra.
That's right. So one of the things I'm working on right now is a lot of people from Africa don't make this connection. More than 90% of Africans don't know what HBCUs are. They don't see that connection between where they are today, the formation of the African Union, and this legacy. So recruiting sometimes becomes a challenge. People think they're not going to institutions which do excellent work, like Leslie enumerated. So that's why we have the HBCU Africa Homecoming Initiative, 400 years after the first enslaved Africans are supposed to have arrived in English America.
Tell us a little bit more about that homecoming.
Yeah. Yeah, so 400 years ago, in August 1619, the first enslaved Africans arrived on the shores of Jamestown, or Point Comfort, Virginia.
Virginia.
Right? And we know what has ensued since then. We went through a period where their very humanity was challenged. Mm-hmm. And HBCUs are fashioned from that legacy of, you know, empowering people who were told by a system that they weren't dignified enough, right? So when we talk about HBCU contribution, it's about reversing the impact of that system and that culture. And that's why Leslie was telling you that Howard alums in law.
She's empowering people.
Absolutely.
It is about sharing.
Absolutely. And that's truly what being African is all about, right?
You know, one thing I've never forgotten is that I was a very little kid in a little town by the name Kavale in southwestern Uganda.
Okay.
And I had an uncle who was going to a junior secondary school called Kigezi High School. Mm-hmm. And he came running, shouting the name of James Kweji Agre. Agre of Achimota.
Yes.
And I said, who is this?
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about James Kweji Agre.
Well, James Eman Kweji Agre is the first Gold Coaster, which later on became Ghana, I know to have attended an HBCU. He was known as the father of African education mm-hmm. at the turn of the 1800s into the 1900s. He attended Livingston College in Salisbury, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And he had such a tremendous impact. You know, he went as a student, became a teacher, a minister, and then joined the Phelps-Stokes Commission, which Leslie will tell you was a contributor to even the founding of the National Federation for Equal Opportunity in Higher Education. He was the first vice principal of Achimota School and a mentor to Kwame Nkrumah, a mentor to Nnamdi Azikiwe. And, you know, when Ghana had its independence, one thing Nkrumah said was, a greater than Agri is here. That was his reference. And I'm sure Agri was comfortable with that because, you know, we have MS-DOS, you have Windows, and within every generation, you expect it to get better. Even Christ said, you should do greater things.
Kwajie Agri was so smart, so smart, so intellectually and environmentally friendly, to the extent that, in fact, when he was working for the Phelps-Stokes Fund, the architects of apartheid in South Africa took a liking for him.
Absolutely. I mean, they were amazed once he had the opportunity to speak. And he had this powerful short narrative, which I recommend for everybody, about the eagle that will not fly. And it's the story about, you know, eagles which had been raised like chicken, which had been fed the food of chicken, and how a naturalist chanced upon that and told the owner of that setup, hey, that bird over there is an eagle. And the owner said, no, but I have raised it to be a chicken. And he was like, no, it's right. So that is a powerful story. It comes down to saying, him saying, hey, you fellow Africans, you are eagles at heart. Through colonial paradigms, slavery, and all that, the system has told you, you are chickens. Spread out your wings and fly. It's a powerful story. And because of that, the award, you know, we have a high award for HBCU stakeholders who are making a significant impact from a global perspective. We call it the Transcendent Order of the African Eagle. And that award will be awarded to the president of Morgan State University, Dr. David Wilson, in Ghana.
Why?
On August the 2nd. Yes.
Why?
Because of the impact he's had. You know, David, you know, I said transcendent, right? David Wilson was a key contributor to getting about 1,000 scholarships from China for HBCU students to get global exposure.
That's interesting.
A lot of HBCU students have not gone outside of this country. I mean, they less than, black students generally are less than 6% of the population, which goes for study abroad. And the transformational impact of study abroad is so huge that when you deprive people of access to that, you're really impacting opportunity for them on a, you know, long-term perspective. And he identified that. He did some great work along that line. And the good news is Morgan State is on the verge of, should I tell them?
Yeah, it's okay. He said
on the verge of establishing a campus. Could very well be the first HBCU. In fact, they are the first HBCU that close.
Very interesting. Right? And so, of course, again, Kwajie Agri was so remarkably liberated to such an extent that during those days, I mean, the UN is talking about the Millennium Development Goals, for example, and one of the keys are gender equality. This man, he talked about how education should not discriminate in favor of gender.
That's right.
He talked about, for example, how if you teach a boy, you end up with an individual, a man. But that if you teach a girl, a woman, you end up with
A nation. Powerful.
Correct. Would you believe that?
Powerful.
Absolutely.
Particularly within that context.
Exactly.
Of the late 1800s. If you look at the cultural context, for him to be so liberated in mind that he was advocating for women.
Yes.
And one of the main ideals of Achimota School, where he was the first,
vice president,
was that equal opportunity for boys and girls in education. We were one of the first co-ed educational institutions.
Yes.
All the others in Cape Coast were a lot of boys' institutions.
Yes.
So Agri's legacy, you know, was amazing.
I have had the opportunity to address the students of Achimota on that beautiful campus.
On that point, though, I just need to give a shout-out to the young ladies on the HBCU campuses. In America now, I'm sure many of your viewers have heard that we're seeing a retrenchment in regulations that support efforts for equal pay and equal opportunity and anti-sexual harassment, anti-sexual discrimination. But the young ladies, our students on our campuses, and the faculty and others, and the men are coming together and are actually leading in the efforts to make sure that the clock is not turned back, to make sure that we are not losing progress against the hard-won efforts toward, and very slow efforts toward gender equality.
Lately, time happened not to be our best ally. Let's go for Jacob. Let's see, Jacob.
Yes.
Your reaction so far?
Yes, I mean, this is an exciting, fascinating discussion. And we're also excited to be a partner with the HBCU Africa Homecoming Initiative. We at Morgan State have been doing excellent work in the past 10 years in supporting higher education in Africa. Myself, in my previous role as a professor in electrical engineering and associate dean for the School of Engineering, we've been going back to our home country, bringing the diaspora together and supporting the knowledge exchange and capacity building in so many areas, including my home country of Ethiopia. We, for example, helped the formation of the African Engineering Deans Council. And that's through working with the Global Engineering Deans Association. So we've been doing a lot of excellent things in Africa. And currently we have a project with an organization called Teach and Serve for Africa, where we also go back and bring the diaspora back to Africa and supporting the continent in capacity building and knowledge exchange. So we were excited that we met Kwabi and his team. We are looking forward to working strongly with them in support of their vision of making this HBCU homecoming a reality.
And to say that
Morgan is in support of this initiative.
Some of the audience of Straight Talk Africa in Africa are young people, are students, are people who would want to turn themselves into something useful. Do you have, for example, opportunities at your institution that they can look to? Do you have any scholarships, for example, any fellowships?
Yeah, actually, well, you know, scholarships and fellowships for students are based on competition, so they are competitive, and we don't usually set aside scholarships for specific type of students. But we have several, we have hundreds of students from Africa who come to HBCUs, including Morgan State University, who have been studying. And like I said, I myself am a student from Africa who benefited from the support and guidance that we got from HBCUs. One of the visions we have of opening a campus in Africa is the fact that a lot of African students who want to have higher education aspirations and opportunity in America or in Europe have a problem coming because of the visa.
The visa.
And of course, the cost of education is very expensive. So our vision is if the students in Africa cannot come to America to get the education, we can take the American education to Africa.
Really?
Make it available. And that's what we're discussing with Kwabena and his team. So if we can give them an American education, an American degree in Africa.
By opening, for example, satellite campuses?
Yes. Nice. And we're in discussion to see if we can make that happen in Ghana. So when students have that opportunity now, having a visa or having, you know, three times the cost of education is not an issue anymore. Another example I want to give is that in the work that I'm doing, for example, in my home country of Ethiopia, we are taking the latest technology of what we used to teach engineering in America, and we're showing them how it can be done in Ethiopia. And things are happening, so technology is changing. So what we're saying is that Since we cannot bring every African who aspires to come to America or Europe for education, why don't we take the education and bring it to the continent?
And how can the African students or budding students on the continent find out that type of information?
It's going to be an announcement very soon. Our president has agreed to travel to Ghana to receive his award and also discuss these additional opportunities. I also will be traveling to Ghana to attend this conference, give workshops, but we just got started. It's going to be exciting. The next 3 to 5 years, you will hear more news about this.
There'll be a recruiting fair.
Jacob and Kobena, unfortunately, there is no democracy in Studio 47. If you are told by the producer to go for a break, you have to go without question. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. So please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules. It's time for Our Voices with me, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gizu Ewart, and we appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. You can watch our show there and leave a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, after months of violent protests in Sudan, a preliminary power-sharing agreement has been reached between the forces of democratic change and the transitional military council. Sudan in transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Today we are discussing the impact of historically black colleges and universities in the United States on Africa. Our guests are Leslie Baskerville, President and CEO of the National Association for Equal Opportunity in Higher Education, Kwabena Boateng, founder and co-president of the African Diaspora Nation, and Jacob Astatic, vice president of International Affairs, Morgan State University. I have to say, gentlemen and ladies and gentlemen, of course, that once again, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Yes.
And to you, Jacob, I owe you an apology.
Sure.
And I hope that you'll find some space in your beautiful Ethiopian heart to forgive me for that.
No problem.
I was able to interject you because, as I said, there is no democracy in Studio 47.
Yes.
When the producer says go, you have to go.
Sure.
Just like a disciplined soldier on
the parade ground.
Could you pick up from where you left?
Sure. And complete your thought, talking about opportunities for students. So in that regard, I said that we welcome all students from Africa to apply. And Kwabena has indicated that there is actually a recruitment fair that will be happening in Ghana, where they're going to introduce HBCUs to the students. So I plan to go to represent Morgan State in that recruitment fair, and hopefully we'll be able to recruit excellent students. But while we're on the topic, I actually have another opportunity that I want to mention. I know that Straight Talk is seen all over Africa, and I know I'll be getting lots of emails and calls for this one.
Really?
But Morgan has received a $2 million grant to provide support and training in blockchain and cryptocurrency. And this is a fund that came from Silicon Valley, and the vision there is to allow HBCUs not to miss out on this new technology of blockchain cryptocurrency. So our fund is there, and right now we have a conference which will be held in New Orleans in October. And right now we have more than 35 HBCU faculty who have signed up to be taught about cryptocurrency. So the vision is to take that technology and teach it in their course so that HBCU students are aware of cryptocurrency and blockchain.
Now,
and our president
It's not only HBCU students or staff that are probably being a little bit challenged in terms of what you call cryptocurrency.
Yes.
I'm sure there are millions of people in our audience who probably would like a little bit of clarification about that type of
currency.
Yes,
so blockchain, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have heard about Bitcoin, where people are using digital currency to exchange and buy and sell. And that's a new type of technology, and it's really spreading very fast. And so this technology now is very groundbreaking, and it's very new and up and coming. So we want to make sure that our colleagues from HBCUs don't miss of this opportunity.
Mm.
So after Dr. Wilson spoke to Kwabena, he returned and he asked the principal investigator, Morgan, who's from the School of Business, to see if there's an opportunity for some African faculty to come and join this workshop that we're going to be having in New Orleans in November. And we have agreed that we're going to give 3 scholarships for Africans. It will be all expenses paid except for the airfare, where they are going to come and attend a 3-day workshop where they're going to learn all the basics about cryptocurrency, and they're going to return to their home institution in Africa where they'll be able to teach blockchain, cryptocurrency, all these amazing new technologies to their students. And so we're excited to promote that event. And of course, they can contact me for more information. But that's the kind of work that we are trying to do in support of and building our partnership with our colleagues and universities in Africa.
It's very awesome. Interesting that you say that, because that reminds me of what happened in the early 1960s. There is what is called the Kenyan Airlift.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many institutions that provided scholarships to African students from Kenya at that time, which was about to get or to regain its political independence, but they would have to buy their own tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And African students, frankly, did not have the means with which to purchase those type of, you know, logistical, you know, tickets so that they could come for these type of opportunities. And so one great African-American artist by the name of Harry Belafonte was able to introduce one great Kenyan politician, Tom Mboya, to one great American senator or congressman from the state of Massachusetts, who was called JFK, John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Yes.
And he was able, with his family foundation, to provide tickets for those students from Kenya to come to have an education in the United States. And it's quite possible that those students, in fact, may have included a future grand or future father of the first African-American president, Barack Hussein Obama.
Interesting.
Is it possible that there could be a good Samaritan or a good Samaritan corporation or whatever that could somehow buy some of those tickets?
Yeah, that's what we hope so. And I think we're going to work closely, very hard with Kwabena to make that happen, so that the cost of the airfare should not be the reason why these faculty members, this is not for students, this is for faculty members who could come and join us. So we're excited to work together, and definitely we will be more than happy to work with anyone who will be able to support that airfare.
Very interesting.
Yes. Another powerful thing is we in 2019.
Yes.
Technology.
Yes.
Allows people to convene together in a virtual space. And it even allows for collaboration. So we've talked about doing working groups on critical areas of science, technology, and engineering And this could be one of these avenues mm-hmm. where we have convenient space in Africa so that it even extends past three.
Yes.
Because we would just retrofit the room with the right camera and equipment.
Yes.
And then you can have more people involved. And it's even going to get better with 5G LTE and all that. So the opportunities are immense going forward.
Very interesting. And President Donald Trump, I think, has actually chipped in. $11 million?
I have no information about that.
For
$11 million of his personal dollars?
Not his personal. I think it's through the government funding.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I know that we're now in a situation where we're fighting an effort by the administration to zero fund a critical pot of funds for HBCUs in legislation. HBCUs have been recognized, and in fact, they are formalized in the Higher Education Act of America.
Right.
And in the Higher Education Act, it defines HBCUs as institutions that were born before 64 and before for the purpose of educating Africans in America or the progeny of the American slave system.
Right.
And from 64 until the present, the country has recognized the centrality of HBCUs to the success of the nation. And in spite of that, HBCUs have endowments that are about one-eighth the size of the historically white colleges and universities, and HBCUs...
One-eighth.
And HBCUs also continue to bear a heavy burden of the extra cost of being an historically black institution in the bond market, as we do in housing and other areas. And so, so bipartisan Congresses have supported HBCUs this year. There's an effort to zero fund a pot of funds that have enabled HBCUs to become strong and to put in place some of the programs that yielded some of the successes that we talked about already. And so we're working hard to make sure that those dollars are there so that HBCUs can grow infrastructures, HBCUs can have a greater student-faculty ratio. HBCUs continue to produce diverse, outstanding graduates in arts and humanities, in health, in the law, in the entire gamut. And so we're working to overcome the effort to zero fund that. We also work to overcome the proposal to zero fund many of the pipeline programs that create the cohort of students that are prepared and excited to go into and out of HBCUs. And so we're doing that. But I just want to add to the thoughts of my brother relative to HBCU community. Morgan is a shining star like most of the HBCUs are. Our data, NAFIO's membership survey, suggests that 85% of HBCUs today have programs, offerings, relationships with either sister city or sister institution or exchanges, research exchanges, student exchanges, faculty exchanges, cultural exchanges, so many exchanges. And so our colleges and universities have strong relationships. The 1890s land grant institutions, our agricultural schools, have gone to African countries and they've put in place incubators. They've prepared training programs so that women, heads of households, can be well equipped to prepare and care for their family. Our medical schools and public health schools are in African countries providing health, sorely needed health, but importantly, working with doctors and health professionals on the continent in learning and exchanging information. And so I'm particularly excited to see if there's an opportunity with the International African Free Trade area for us to increase exchanges in research and in goods and services provided by HBCUs. HBCUs have a number of patents and they produce goods and services.
Very interesting. What is your relationship, for example, with the Congressional Black Caucus?
The Congressional Black Caucus is what we call the conscience of the Congress, and the Congressional Black Caucus is our most potent and consistent advocate for HBCUs and for the primary communities from which they come. This year, we're privileged to have a 50-member Congressional Black Caucus, and so the voice that has always been the conscience and very potent is now even more potent. And so we work with them as we do the range of other groups to make sure, on both sides of the aisle, to make sure that as many elected officials, as many policy shapers, as many corporate heads and executives, wherever they are, anybody who has an influence and resources and a passion for making sure that America lives up to its egalitarian ideal, that we close the wealth gap, that we close the health gap, that we close the education gap, that we close the justice gap, we want to talk with them and tell the story about the fact that America cannot realize its important goals without strong, thriving HBCUs.
Until to make sure that education becomes an equal opportunity employer. Everybody. Now, Kwabena, you talk about the homecoming. How much is, for example, the government of the Republic of Ghana, how much is it involved in this?
Well, the HBCU Africa Homecoming Initiative has actually been endorsed by the Office of the President, responsible for diaspora affairs.
President Nana Akufo-Addo himself.
Yes, the office, you know, the Office of Diaspora Affairs at the Office of the President. So they are going to be part. You know, once we get there, they're going to be part of the events. They're going to receive some of the dignitaries that we're going to be sending in. And, you know, the president declared this year the year of return after the 400-year history. And, you know, individuals going and visiting, it's transient. But the HBCU Africa Homecoming is about an institutional return, the establishment of a permanent bridge. And the whole initiative, the point is to facilitate a one-stop platform. And it's been endorsed by the African Union, by the way.
In fact, I was going to ask you, why not broaden it so that you can, in fact, collaborate with the African continent by working with the African Union, which is based in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
Well, we already are. That's why it's called the HBC Africa Homecoming, and it's been endorsed by the African Union. So we did the media launch at the African Union mission here. And the goal of Africa Homecoming is for us to move around. We start in where the connections are strongest and where the environment is most conducive at this point in time, given the historical context. But the goal is definitely to move it around. And, you know, Leslie was talking about the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement. African heads of state just about 2 days ago agreed to host the secretariat in Accra, Ghana.
Terrific.
So there's going to be great synergy between Morgan's initiative to establish a permanent campus, satellite campus in Africa, and its proximity to the Secretariat for the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. So we essentially talking about a center for Pan-African trade and investment, and Morgan playing a leading role in that.
Very interesting. Kwabena, we do have a very rare opportunity for being a little bit more democratic. And so let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. And good evening, Mr. Chibirango from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Mr. Chibirango, can you hear me? I'm afraid that the line seems to be environmentally and technologically unfriendly. Could you please complete your thought?
Yes, so the siting of the Continental Free Trade Area, which, by the way, is a historic, unprecedented move by Africa to establish a common market of 1.2 billion people and potentially $3 trillion economy. It is unprecedented, and having HBCUs integrated in that ecosystem actually presents options for students, even from here, And the AU's position is, if you are a descendant, or you came from Africa and you live outside Africa, you are a member of the African Union.
You are African.
Right, mm-hmm. Yes. So
you know, it was your founding president, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, who once said that he was not an African because he was born in Africa, but rather he was an African because Africa was born in him.
So transcendent. So transcendent.
Very interesting. What about you, Jacob? Mm-hmm. What are some of the challenges that you have met so far, or you anticipate?
Yeah, I mean, challenges, Africa, like I said, is going through its growth and development. It has a very young population. I'm sure you're aware that, close to 50% or 60% of the African population is under 25. So where there's challenge, there's opportunity. And for us, it's the fact that we at Morgan State want to play a leading role in bridging the gap between what is happening in Africa and what's happening with African Americans in the USA.
I see.
And the vision we have is, how do we play a critical role in making sure that the Africans from the continent and the African Americans from the USA and the diaspora can have a way of working back and forth, and providing the support for the continent. And we really are excited about playing a key role in that area.
I see.
So,
you wanted to say
NAFIO, yes. NAFIO is privileged also to be a partner with the HBCU Africa Homecoming. Mm-hmm. And in response to your question about the Africa Union, Ambassador Arakana, we had the official announcement at the African Union headquarters, and she's very committed, and we're excited to working with her. But NAFIO, as the voice for blacks in higher education and the membership of all the HBCUs, we want to focus on the potential of the African free trade area. The $3.4 trillion
economic bloc. The African continental free trade area.
Free trade area.
Arguably the largest trading body, I think.
Absolutely.
Since the World Trade Organization.
And so there's a $3.4 trillion bloc. If you add the $1.3 trillion economic bloc of Africans ancestored in America, we can take it even higher. And so while they're going to have celebrations and they're going to have student recruitment festivals, NAFIO is hoping to have discussions about four specific areas where we can agree with African countries to work collaboratively. So at the end of 5 years and 10 years and 15 years, we can grow collectively. In closing, as I suggested, the education gap, the economic gap, the wealth gap, the health gap, the justice gaps, those gaps. So we're going to bring the heads of HBCUs, presidents and chancellors, and others who want to and should be at the table to talk about developing a plan, and then come from the August convening to Washington, D.C. in December, which will be the 50th anniversary celebration of NAFIO, to talk about establishing specific markers and measuring the movement so that Africans around the globe can move forward together.
Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. And on that note, thank you very much. And our guest, of course, today, we are Leslie Bakersfield, Kwabena Boateng, and Jacobo Astatic. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beter, HBCU, and please remember to keep the African hopes alive.
Welcome to Learn.